Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varada. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. 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 Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Bihari. Jai Om Vishnu Par Paramahansa Privajakacharya Shtotara Shatashi Shimadabhai Charanaravinda Bhakti Vranta Swami Shila Prabhupada Ki Anant Koti Vaishna Vrinda Ki Jai Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande. Glorious to the assembled Vaishnavas. Glorious to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Where can I find the Srimad Bhagavatam? Okay, today we're going to read from 3rd Canto, chapter 19. Does anyone know the title of the chapter? There it is. Text number 23. Tadadite samabhavat.
Tadadite samabhavat.
Sahasa hridive patu. Smarantya Bharturadesham Stanach Chastrik Prasusruve Tadadite Samabhavat Sahasa Hridive Patuh Smarantya Bharturadesham Stanach Chastrik Prasusruve Tadadite samabhavat Sahasa hridive patuh Smarantya barturadesham Stanach chasrik prasusruve Please chant. Tadadite samabhavat Tadadite samabhavat Sahasa hridive patu Smarantya bharturadesham Smanat shastrik prasum sarve Tadadite samabhavat Svarantya Varturadesham Stanat Shastri Prasusruve Tadadite Samabhavat Sahasa Hridive Patuhu Svarantya Varturadesham Stanat Shastri Prasusruve Tada, at that moment, Ditehe of Diti, Samabhavat occurred. Sahasa, suddenly. Hridi, in the heart. Vepatuhu, a shudder. Smarantya, recalling. Bartuhu, Of her husband, Kashyapa. Adesham, the words. stanat from her breast, cha and asrik blood, prasusruve flowed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. At that very moment, a shudder suddenly ran through the heart of Diti, the mother of Hiranyaksha. She recalled the words of her husband, Kashyapa, and blood flowed from her breasts. Purport. At Hiranyaksha's last moment, his mother, Diti, remembered what her husband had said. Although her sons would be demons, they would have the advantage of being killed by the personality of Godhead himself. She remembered this incident by the grace of the Lord, and her breasts flowed blood instead of milk. In many instances, we find that when a mother is moved by affection for her sons, milk flows from her breasts. In the case of the demon's mother, the blood could not transform into milk, but it flowed down her breasts as it was. Blood transforms into milk. To drink milk is auspicious, but to drink blood is inauspicious, although they are one and the same thing. This formula is applicable in the case of cow's milk also. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishthang Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeyaham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Nvaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tang Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpaturupascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivas Adigor Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatire Shatarine Mukham karoti vachalam pangum glanghayate gri pangayate girim yat kripa tamaham vande shri guru dinataranam. So again the text, tada dite samabhavat sahasa hridi vepatuhu smarantya bartur adesham stanach chasrik pasu sruve. At that very moment, a shudder suddenly ran through the heart of Diti, the mother of Hiranyaksha. She recalled the words of her husband, Kashyapa, and blood flowed from her breasts. So some of you may be wondering, who is this fellow who just landed in your community and is now sitting in front of you? So I'll tell a little bit about myself, just to introduce. My name is Dwijamani Gora Das. Dwijamani, many people ask me, what does it mean? It is a name for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Some of you may know the song. Udilo Aruna Puravapage Dijamani Gaura Amani Jage. So my name comes from this song. Dija means Brahmana. Mani means a jewel. So Mahaprabhu was born in a family of Brahmanas, the son of Sachi Mata and Jagannath Mishra. And he was known as the jewel among the Brahmins in this Brahmin community. He was shining with all the good qualities and pure heart. So Dijamani is Gauranga. And I'm the Das. So I was, it may or may not be relevant, but I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, on the East Coast, and I was serving in 10 years around the United States, different areas, And then now I'm based in, for the last 5 years, in Lithuania, which is in Eastern Europe, one of the Baltic states, not too far from Russia, Poland. And I have somehow or other connected with Devavrata Prabhu, who is a member of your community. And we were in India last year together for some few weeks in Varanasi to help and learn from also the preachers there. And yeah, he invited me here in his absence to help continue with some of the programs that he's created and sustained in the LA area, I guess, and a little bit maybe beyond. So that's a little bit about myself. Thank you for having me here. It's a real pleasure to be here and to see the opulence and beauty and devotion in New Dwarka. It's quite impressive. I know if you're here every day, maybe you don't feel it, maybe you do. I'm sure many devotees here are advanced, feeling the freshness of Krishna consciousness every day. But for a newcomer, it's very impressive. Someone who comes very rarely is such an impressive thing to see. So thank you very much for all of your dedication. So this, we're hearing now about the fight between Varahadev and Hiranyaksha. Yes. So it's a very intense episode here, and now it's coming to a close. So, and as I recall, because I remember the BBT painting, it takes place in outer space, I believe, which is really, really interesting, a really big intergalactic battle here. And the fight, you know, right before the fight, Varahadev had been carrying Bhumi Devi. She was distressed. She was in trouble, in danger, and he placed her in a safe place, you know. Just like you sometimes see in a movie, you know, some villain comes to attack a man with his wife. The man says, "Wait, hold on," you know, and he takes his sweetie pie, places her in a little safe place, says, "Wait right here, okay?" And then he goes and takes care of business, right? So then Varahadev is over here taking care, enjoying this transcendental leela, because the fighting spirit is within us, right? We like to see a good fight. People pay good money, actually, to go see some very accomplished fighters contend. And the suspense is there, the excitement. You don't know who will win. Will it be Tyson? Will it be Holyfield, right? So we're trying to stay on the Holyfield side, right? So then, this fight is going on. It's very intense. And Krishna likes that. You know, there's no, you know, what is the verse? There's no equal to Krishna. Yeah? No one can come close to measure the glory, opulence, power, the might of Krishna. But Krishna, he likes to enjoy pastimes, you know. He's so personal. He's so filled with enjoyment, enjoying spirit, enjoyment mood. He's so filled with so many wonderful qualities, and he displays those qualities through his activities. Yeah. And then it gives us an opportunity to become attracted to him, to be a chance to glorify him, to become attached, to develop love for him. So Krishna is a hero. He's the great hero. And here he's displaying his heroic quality, you know. He's fighting with this demon. And he allows it to take place in such a way that it seems like, you know, sometimes the demon might get the upper hand, you know. And Krishna also, by his inconceivable potency, he experiences that. The suspense and the excitement is there for him as well. So this fighting is really enjoyable. But of course, we know there's many layers to each lila. Every activity of the Lord has unlimited meanings. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that each word of Bhagavatam can reveal unlimited interesting meanings, can give more definition to our devotion. So the at this moment, like we heard yesterday from His Grace Jutakarma Prabhu about the Sudarshan Chakra, which the Lord has now summoned to give the final death blow. You know, it signals the end of the fight. The Lord is ready to deal the death blow. And at this time, Diti, the mother of Hiranyaksha, I don't want to read too much into it, but we can see here, Sahasa Hridi Vepatuhu, that in her heart there's a shudder, there's a vibration, you know, could be from fear, it doesn't say, you know, I didn't look at all the commentaries available. Srila Prabhupada explains here, that, you know, there's affection the mother feels for her son, you know. And we see that even in all the species of life, right? There's so much affection in the families, even of the rabbits and the tigers. There's even this beautiful verse quoted in the Bhagavad Gita, maybe you remember, in the 5th chapter, about the tortoise, the fish, and the birds. How they raise their offspring. How do they send that loving energy to their offspring? They each have different ways. And they're all remote ways. So the tortoise lays the eggs somewhere in the dune. And then the tortoise continues on his path to the sea. And even while in the water, while somewhere else, meditating on those eggs, the eggs are receiving that nourishment, that love, and they hatch. So the bird is nourishing the children in the eggs, you know, and in the nest by touch, simply by touching, by contact, sense of touch. And the fish, thank you. They have many children, you know. I heard that they lay like hundreds of eggs. Yeah? And the fish doesn't have arms and legs. But the fish has these eyes that are always open. And with the eyes, the fish is just seeing the eggs, and through the eyes, giving the nourishment. So if this is possible, even in ordinary species of life here in this world, what to speak of our relationship with Krishna? You know, Krishna is present everywhere. Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti pasyanti panti kalayanti chiram jaganti ananda chinmayasad ujvala vigrahasya govindam adi purusham tamahang bhajami. In this verse it's explained, Lord Brahma sharing his realization that Krishna can do anything he wants with any one of his unlimitedly powerful senses. But another explanation of this verse is that Krishna, he can act through any of the senses of any of the living entities. He can see through anyone's eyes. He can hear through anyone's ears. So Krishna's omnipotency, his omnipresence, you know, means that there's no block to him distributing his affection and his love for his devotees. He is Bhakta Vatsala, and there's no limit. You know, there's no limit to how much Krishna can raise his offspring. We're all sons of God, but when we develop that obedience, that desire to be with Krishna again, he makes so many careful arrangements to let his presence be felt in our life. I think everyone has this experience, you know. So here Diti, you know, she's feeling some kind of affection for her son, natural affection for the son, Hiranyaksha. The natural display of love, you know, from a mother is through the milk, through her breast milk. You know, she gives her love to the children through the milk. You know, in our temple where I live now in Kaunas, which is the second largest city in Lithuania, we have a whole generation of devotees who are having children now. So in the temple, every morning and evening, there's like all these transcendental families, you know. They're all spinning and dancing, having harikatha, and I sometimes notice that, you know, my god sisters or something, some of them, they love their children so much, they get overflowing with affection. They pick up the child and they just want to feed him, you know. They just want to feed him and cuddle him. And like this, you know, the affection is felt between mother and son. Mother and daughter also. Prabhupada says that this is the strongest form of love in the material world. The closest thing to pure love is this attachment between the mother and son. And by nature's arrangement, it's there to make sure that the younger generation is given the opportunity to be, you know, be raised properly, to get the protection that they need. So we receive, you know, mother's love through the milk. And when we stop feeding from our mother as we grow up, then we start to receive from our other mothers. You know, there's seven mothers in the Vedic culture. And one of the most important is the cow. So mother cow, you know, Gomata, she's giving us her love and affection through milk. And, you know, once I asked my spiritual master a question about the United States, because I noticed growing up in the U.S., that there's a lot of impious activities, you know, even among like the educated aristocratic class. You know? I grew up in an affluent neighborhood in Atlanta, and I admired, you know, many of my friends and their parents and their families. But I was always wondering, like, how is it that they're so well-to-do, they have so many opportunities, so much economic development, but actually, you know, their lives are filled with a lot of impious activities. And I asked my spiritual master about this. America is so flourishing in so many ways, but there's so much impiety you can observe everywhere. What's going on? How is that possible? And he said something very short, simple. He said, it's because of milk. Americans, for generations now, they're valuing milk very much, cow's milk. You know, and I remember also when I grew up, me and my friends, we loved to drink milk. You know, we'd come home from playing basketball or doing some band practice, and then we'd just sit and we'd have pizza and drink like a lot of milk. Like we'd have it, we'd just take a gallon of milk and we'd take it down. You know, we loved it so much. You know, there was a saying when I grew up, you know, there was milk, it does the body good. You know. So this goodness of milk is recognized. And we might underestimate it, but the potency of milk is very great. It's very great. There's, what is milk? You know, milk is like, it's nourishing. It's healing. It's so satisfying, you know. And Srila Prabhupada explained that, you know, this milk, what is it? It's a transformation of blood, actually. The cow is eating the grass, you know, and from the grass she's digesting, it becomes blood in her system, and then because of her affection, her natural motherly affection, is transforming into milk. So, is there anyone who can take grass, ordinary grass, and do some kind of process, procedure, and derive from it milk? Is there anyone who can do that? No. So this is like really a miracle, if you think about it. It's really a miracle. So many miracles happening before us, we don't notice. You know? And she's turning this grass into the most nourishing substance for human progress, for helping humans become strong, happy, progressive, even spiritual, you know? We say on Sankirtan often, you look very spiritual, you know? You must be drinking milk. Yeah, so it's like liquid religiosity. You know, this milk is so potent. Mahaprabhu, when he met with the Chand Kazi, you know, they were actually related because they grew in the same neighborhood. He said, "Uncle, you know, you're my uncle. You know, you're not going to welcome me into your home." He was thinking, "Well, you know, you're coming to my home with so many like flagstaffs and torches of flames and angry, you know, Sankirtan devotees. Like, what's going on? How am I supposed to..." He said, "Uncle, come on, that's external. You know, we're brother. You know, we're brothers. We're nephew and uncle here. Let's relate. You know, open your mind to me. You know, what's going on? Why do you hate? What is your anger? What is your, you know, why are you caught up? Why are you trying to stop the Sankirtan movement? Why are you insulting us like this, breaking the mridangas?" He said, "You know, I'll tell you honestly. You know, we don't believe in this Hindu way, you know, this Hindu religion." He said, Mahaprabhu, you know, went beyond this external discussion. He said, "But let's get down to the facts, you know. You in your religion, you're claiming that you have an opportunity to kill the animals and that this is religious sacrifice. But if you think about it, we're receiving so much service from the cow, from the bull. They're giving us everything we need. They're like our father and mother. So why don't we reciprocate with nature's arrangement? Why don't we just accept it and be grateful? You know? What kind of religion is this where you kill your mother? You take from her the milk first and then you cut her throat. What kind of religion is this? You know? Do you have a heart?" Yeah. And then the Chand Kazi had to admit, "Yes, our scriptures, the message has been lost. Because our scholars, they haven't understood these things perfectly. Because they have either manipulated or they themselves are not in a state of consciousness to be able to receive the knowledge purely." You know? So this is a lesson for us also. The Shastra is not enough. You know, we have to be guided by a pure-hearted soul to be able to extract the essence of the scriptures. And in this way, Mahaprabhu revealed to him the hypocrisy going on in the name of religion. And the Chandkazi at that point, at a certain point, of course, there were other events, but then eventually he agreed to protect the Sankirtan movement. He understood the wholesomeness, the universality of the Sankirtan movement. So although blood and milk are the same, one is auspicious, one is inauspicious. So the blood is a sign of doom and gloom. And the milk is a sign of purity, of nectar. So this theme is also in the Bhagavad Gita, in all the Vedic literature, that you have one asset, one very powerful asset. You can use it for good purpose, for sat, or you can use the same thing for a very bad purpose, asat. Some examples, can you think of any? One, for example, is affection. We're talking about that now, affection. Love, attachment. You know, love for the body, love for the nation at the exclusion of others. You know, this actually leads to conflict, to difficulties. But love, you know, affection, attachment for service to the deity, for association of devotees, and this opens the door of liberation. Another asset is intelligence. You know, Krishna says, "Namam duskritino mudha prapadyante naradhama yana mayaya parita jnana asuram bhavam ashita." That if a person, he may be very meritorious, he has gathered a lot of credit, a lot of accolades, but if he uses that, namam duskritina, he uses it in order to, for self-aggrandizement, to turn others away from Krishna consciousness, then this is, you know, asuram bhava. This is the mood, the dealings of the asuras. But sukritina, jana sukritina, these are people who use their merits, whatever they have received, power, abilities, they engage that in a way to enhance or glorify God, spread the glories of God. I was always impressed whenever, you know, I was a little kid, my parents would watch the Oscar ceremonies, you know, and you can see that some people come up and they take the glory for themselves. But then there were some people who were more humble and they would say, you know, all glories to my parents, first of all, and then all glories to God. Because without his blessings, I couldn't do anything. And I was always impressed, you know, this was for me like more impressive than church sermon. You know, some powerful Hollywood actor is saying this. I was like, wow, you know, so impressive. So, sukritina, the gifts that we gain from whatever austerity we perform, from whatever talents we have inherited, any wealth, beauty, we use that as a way to draw attention to Krishna. Then, so if we try to get this, you know, power by force, as it's happening now, you know, this industry of meat, producing meat, by force, by violence, we are taking energy and strength from nature. Because by eating these things, we can become strong, and we see many people become strong, powerful, by this type of eating, by this diet. But at what cost, you know? It creates a very dark future. It fills our lives with anxiety, you know. So a thief, a killer, can he be happy, you know? A person may become very powerful, very strong, wealthy, rich. But if he does it by impure methods, can he become happy? This is a mistake a lot of people make, you know. This is soul killing, pashugna. This is actual civilized people will abandon all of this artificial, forceful, violent ways of trying to become developed. The word in Sanskrit for killer of the soul is synonymous with killer of animals, pashugna. One who kills the animal, he's as good as a killer of his own soul. Why? Because animals are are in a naturally very dependent position on human beings. Of course, I'm not speaking about ferocious animals, but especially these very peaceful animals. If we exploit them, deers, rabbits, cows, you know, if we take it for our own pleasure, for our own desire to exploit them, then this is equivalent to killing the soul. Because it means we're killing our capacity for compassion. You know, we're killing our capacity for understanding, for harmony. So, from this text, from this discussion, what is our homework then? What do we have to do? I would submit that the first step is to recognize this Hiranyaksha tendency within ourselves. Because it's within every conditioned soul, you know. That's why we receive the material body. So do we place these external achievements above the purity, internal purity? Do we see things like that? Are we attracted by somebody's external achievements without any regard for his or her purity? It reflects on our value, you know. I've heard it said that Krishna, he's not attracted by any beauty which is not born of pure affection for him. Krishna is not attracted by any type of beauty which is not born of pure affection for him. So, we might not be able to detect these kind of attitudes within ourselves, this asura bhav, but others can see it. Others can see it. And when we're living with those who are on the spiritual path, who are trying to become devotees, then inevitably there will be moments where we have a mirror to our face and we can observe these type of tendencies within ourselves. And this is part of the process. And if we can accept this, and we can face that there's corruption, there is some corruption within my heart, within myself, then we can take up this chanting of Hare Krishna very sincerely. We can begin to discover what it means to take shelter of the holy name. We can go beyond a mechanical practice and put in our own feeling, our own emotion, our own individual desire into our chanting, and Krishna will reciprocate with that. He will reveal himself through the association of devotees, through the Sankirtan. And then we just need to continue with enthusiasm, with determination, with patience, with trust, with love and trust for the devotees, that this is the medicine I need for my disease. So the Lord has revealed here the Sudarshan Chakra. Also in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime, he brought out the Sudarshan Chakra, but then he withdrew it at the request of Nityananda Prabhu. You know, because now the Sudarshan Chakra for us is the japa. This is the japa chakra, japa mala. We have to take shelter of this chanting and face this Hiranyaksha. I'll stop here because our time is up. Yes. There's a comment, I hope, or a correction. And I want to thank everyone for patiently hearing. To my rambling.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu, for a very nice class. There's no doubt about what, you know, Prabhupada taught us about the importance, the glories of milk. But unfortunately, in many countries in the world in this time, the milk industry is intrinsically linked up with the meat industry, and that's why milk is so inexpensive and is very much contaminated. Prabhupada, of course, had his solution, which was cow protection and varnashram. And when devotees can get hold of this kind of milk, this kind of milk is liquid love because it's milk that contains the love of the mother. But the cows that are mistreated within the huge industrial farms, they don't have liquid love in their milk because they're full of fear and adrenaline and antibiotics and all kinds of... they're even fed food that's not even vegetarian. Mm. And so this kind of milk is something else. And I think, you know, everybody personally can choose what they want to do about it. But ultimately, the Prabhupada wanted us to move forward and to be able to provide this kind of milk, which is the thing that gives the very fine brain substance that will help us unravel the mystery of Krishna and help us to go deeper into Krishna consciousness. And this is the kind of milk which we all very much need. And at this time, it's very difficult to get hold of.
Thank you.
Would you like to say something?
I agree with what you say. And I feel in some ways unfortunate because I grew up in a city, and I don't have any like memories, relationship with many animals, what to speak of cows. So, but what steps can we take practically, you know? What can we do practically to take steps for this? Should we go get some land and have a cow? That's possible, to do some cow protection or to work with devotees who are making strides in that direction. And to also raise awareness about it, you know, to at every chance, you know, whenever we want to glorify Krishna, we have to also glorify his tariya, anything that's related with him. So when we get a chance to speak and glorify, it's a very powerful process, actually. Even though we personally might not be involved in cow protection, but when we have a chance to speak to an audience, to inform them of this, just like Mahaprabhu was preaching to Chankasi, to explain to them clearly, reasonably, logically, you know, that the importance of this, of recognizing the sacred nature of the cow. You know, when I was in Israel, visited there a few times because my family lives there. I have a Muslim family, Muslim background. And they, you know, one of my cousins, he said, don't go to India, because I was expressing interest in India at that time. I was younger. It was before I knew the devotees. And he was saying, don't go there because they worship the cow over there. They're crazy. These Hindu people, they're really crazy. They worship the cow. And I said, well, when he said that to me, it was like a negative preaching, you know. But when I heard that, I was like, really? They worship the cow? Well, there must be something there, you know. It must be something true. Because how could it be? I just thought, how could it be that like so many people, such an old ancient civilization, and thousands and millions of people are worshiping cows? There must be a good reason, you know? So even though he was trying to like dissuade me, I caught on to that. And I wanted to find out more. You know, I had an intrinsic faith that there must be some goodness about that. There must be some good reason for this. So somehow or other, it's an important topic that should be discussed. And the more that the human society is discussing it, made aware of it, and the devotees, you know, get involved in this way, I think that that can make a big difference. That can make it, for me, it made a difference. And if it worked for me, I think it can work for others. So your message is very accepted. And thank you very much, Mother. And I think that we agree. I don't have any solutions personally, but this is just something I think good to hear about. Okay, any other points? Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a wonderful class. In the end, you mentioned about our homework.
Yes.
To kind of see what tendencies we do have in ourselves, which are demoniac. Yesterday in Sankirtan, someone asked me, well, how about like these big dictators of the world? Are they pure? Are they bad? And made me think that, well, they're jivas. Jivas are pure, but their definition. And I think sometimes we forget about it and develop this hatred towards such personalities, mm-hmm. which they do deserve, But we don't deserve to develop hatred in our hearts, which becomes an obstacle on the devotional service. From the kind of knowing the inside what's going on between Russia and Ukraine, the war is not happening, like the bigger war is happening not on the battlefield by bombing each other. It's happening via social media when so much hatred is being developed on both sides. Everything is black and white for each side. Mm. And I just want to like make a comment and ask for your opinion of us as a devotees. I know Srila Prabhupada would call politicians and like rascals and demons, who they are, but he didn't experience hatred towards them. I'm pretty sure he saw them as jivas who got bewildered by material nature and got addicted to power, which very addicting. And I'm just recognizing that I have those tendencies too, and I don't know if that position, maybe I would be one of those dictators too. How do I know? So it's a different scale of temptation. And what I was reflecting, understanding that to recognize what is right, what is wrong is good, but not to put everything black and white and have compassion towards versus hatred in our hearts.
Yes, thank you. I always remember that part of the Bhagavatam in the first canto, I forget where, Srila Prabhupada says that just by, you know, fervently, eagerly spreading the principles of the Bhagavatam, all of the anomalies and madness in the world will be gradually put back in the rightful place, and everything will again become clear about the path, you know, the most auspicious path for human life. So that, to get distracted and to become absorbed in demonizing, you know, one party or another, it's not really our purpose, you know. Our purpose is to, my Guru Maharaj once said, if we meet Kali himself, what are we going to do? We're going to take him into the ashram, shave him up, put him on Dodi and Tilak, and put him in the Bhakta program, you know. So that's our mood, is like, we're like eager to make, and if we see such a person, you know, it's like a great challenge, you know, opportunity to see how can we glorify Mahaprabhu by making this person chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam, read a book, you know. So I appreciate your comment. Thank you. We'll stop here. Yeah, okay, one more.
Hare Krishna. I just wanted to personally thank you for accepting to speak on a short notice. And you'll be here for how long?
I don't have a return yet, probably mid or late December.
Oh, okay. All right, Krishna. So we'll hear from you again. Just on this last point that Bhakti Narina brought up, this is not a story, it's a fact. In Georgia, which is in the same area where this war is going on, there was a war instigated by their neighbor, where there were like a civil war going on. And so the devotees, there were quite a few devotees there at the time, they were distributing prasadam to both sides. So one devotee got caught distributing prasadam, and he was brought to the head of that unit, military unit, and they wanted to kill him because he was from the other side by birth. So the head of the military unit said, "Oh, you're a Hare Krishna?" And he said, "Yeah." And he told his men, "Let him go." And so the devotee was shocked. "Why is he doing this?" He said, "Before this war started, I used to go to your Sunday feast."
Wow. See? That's the evidence. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. All glories to the beautiful Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.